Q.
Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I'm right there.
Hello and welcome from deep inside the worst toilet possible at Jolly Rogers Studio. This is the Q Filmcast once again. And whether you're listening to us online or worldwide, perhaps nationwide, one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If you don't yet know, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week at Jolly Rogers Studio where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. And here I am, as always, with the men of the show. The men of the queue. We're talking about James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Doing well. Doing very well, Savage. And I'll get back to you in just a second on that one.
Yeah, right.
I have some things to share.
Yeah, I've spotted somebody over there.
Yeah, Max Gumbo Johnson.
What's happening?
There I am. Here you are.
Here I am.
Here.
The one that you love.
The one. I know. I started to bust into air supply.
Right.
Whew. Thank God you saved me from that one.
Hey, come on now. Don't be knocking air supply.
Right.
No.
Okay, you can.
Adam the Bomb Rogers, our producer, sitting over there in his producing cube.
I'm not singing.
Thank you. So here you are, guys, the Q Filmcast. Yeah, absolutely where you want to be. We are going to bring to you a film from Netflix Instant that we pulled out. We're going to review it. We're going to cue it.
That's what we do.
And review it.
That's what we do.
And every show ends with a top three list inspired by the movie in question.
Even this show?
This show. And, you know, this show is special, Savage.
Is it?
Yeah, and we've been doing this for a few weeks. You know, we've been going around and pulling out films from Netflix Instant.
Yeah.
That we deem to be tens.
Yeah.
We've seen them. At one point, we said, that's a 10 to me.
Absolutely.
And there's no guarantee it's going to stay there. Maybe you watch it again, you go, well, maybe it's more like an 8.35 or something.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
But that's the way this round has been played. And you are ending this round. This is final selection of our round of tens.
My 10.
This is Savage's 10.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into that in a minute. But before we do, let's talk about how to keep up with us.
Sure.
We're talking about Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. It doesn't matter, Savage.
All that stuff.
Let's make it simple. You want to go to theqfilmcast.net. Yeah, did you hear that, Max?
I did hear that.
Have you ever been to theqfilmcast.net?
Yeah, of course I've been there. I'm on there.
You know what you can say about going to theqfilmcast.net? It's better than any meat injection you will ever have.
Oh, wow.
A thousand times
I
better.
Want you to take your orgasm and multiply that by 1,000 times. That's what it's like going to the queue.
I don't know if it's that good.
And that's a clue, by the way.
It is a clue.
To the film we're going to review. And we'll get to that in one more second. But I want to answer your question, Savage. You said, how am I doing this week?
How are you doing this week?
Want to know how I've been doing?
I want to
know. I've had a great week. Not at any time this week. That I have to release my suppositories into a hellish toilet and dive in head first to retrieve them.
Did you go feet first?
No, full head. Cannonball style. Actually, a jackknife.
Why would you retrieve them?
Well, you know, it didn't have a lot of options.
Right.
Did you know that not at any time during this week did the most angry man in Scotland kick me square in the testicles with overwhelming gusto?
That's good. So you went to Scotland this week?
No, it was a guy from Wales.
He wailed on you.
He wailed on me, yeah.
All right.
Which were the size of Wales. And by the way, I did not die of toxoplasmosis.
Always good.
Awesome.
Not bad.
I mean, you got them cats. So.
Right.
It's always a threat.
That's kind of a miracle, isn't it, producer? Okay, did we give enough clues?
Yeah, I think so.
Savage, reveal the film that we're going to talk about tonight that you deem as a 10, and I want you to reveal after that the top three that it inspired. Go.
My 10, the round of 10s, is Trainspotting. 1996, 97, Trainspotting. Danny Boyle film.
Interesting, because some places say 96, some places say 97. It must have been released on December 31st.
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
That's crazy.
International dateline and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something.
And the top three drug-induced scenes in movies.
Is alcohol a drug? Can it be considered a drug?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Computer's a drug. TV's a drug. There's all kinds
of
drugs.
Well, now you're just getting crazy.
Now I'm doing my list again.
Wait a minute. He went a little off the reservation there.
Yeah. Crazy, man.
Right.
Everything's a drug.
Basically, if you just sideways.
Yeah, basically.
You just sideways. Yeah.
If something got control of you instead of you got control of it.
Drugs.
Okay. But let's get into it. Yeah, 1996, 97-ish, Trainspotting. Danny Boyle's, for the most part, his feature debut. And he's the latest thing he did really was the Olympics, man. He did the Olympic opening.
Really?
He designed and directed that whole thing.
For the London Olympics?
Yeah.
All right.
And then George Miller hired him to do Mad Max stunt work.
Really?
Crazy.
Did he do the Mad Max stunt work?
No, not Danny Boyle. The guys that he had do the opening ceremony. George Miller said, hey, you need to come in and consult.
He hired David Beckham?
No, stop. Max, when you talk about Danny Boyle, though, obviously we're talking about Trainspotting. What other films is he kind of known for or that you remember him for?
I remember 28 Days Later.
Oh, yeah. That was him?
Yeah. Sunshine.
Yeah.
I like Under 27 Hours.
The Beach.
Is that one with Franco?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I liked it. I didn't like it as much as 28 Days Later.
I like 28 Days Later.
He likes a lot of numbers in his movies. He's got millions.
Right.
28s.
127s. But let's talk about this one.
2012 Olympic openings.
See, interesting. We've got a conspiracy here.
Right.
Let's talk about this one, guys. Trainspotting. It stars Ewan McGregor, Johnny Lee Miller, who was married to, what's her face? Angelina Jolie?
No.
That's Brad Pitt.
Before Brad Pitt.
No,
come on.
No, they were never married.
Yeah, they were. Weren't they?
No.
I have no idea.
No. Johnny Lee
Look into that. Johnny Lee Miller was married to Angelina Jolie. Am I correct?
No.
Hold on. We're going to.
He was in Hackers. Yeah.
Billy Bob Thornton
was
married.
He was married to her.
Married to Angelina Jolie. There you go. Yeah.
Wow. For 4 years.
For 4 years. See, I know what I'm talking about. Enough of that.
That chick gets around.
Yeah. Right, for real.
Buy Us Magazine. You want to hear about Angelina Jolie. Yeah. Robert Carlyle.
Yeah.
We know
Love
he was in this film.
Yeah.
With an introduction from the magnificent Kelly MacDonald. Yeah, so if you've seen it, keep listening. See if you agree or disagree. Or if not, you keep listening to see if it's something you may want to queue up yourself. And let's get on to it, guys, right here, right now. Let's talk about Trainspotting. Max Gumbo Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always stop at this point. We talk about what the critics thought.
Yep.
I want you to tell me with great gusto and authority, what did IMDb give this film? Savage gave it a 10. What do you think IMDb gave this film?
IMDb, I will give this with great gusto. I will say 8.7.
Tone down the gusto, man.
That's what you asked for.
No, I mean, the gusto was good. The number would need to be toned down.
7.6.
8.2.
Oh, okay.
It was close. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Savage.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes.
Sure.
Critics and users, what do you think?
100%.
Yeah. Were you the critics?
No, I don't think so.
Critics, what do you think?
100%.
Stop now.
98%.
89%.
I had it backwards.
Yeah, you had a little dyslexic moment.
Right, right.
Still, that's a good score. 89% by the critics.
No, it's not bad.
Users on what is, by the way, being known as kind of a cultural of that time landmark film, what percentage-wise users?
98%.
93%.
No,
a little
close.
Bit of love. A little bit of love from the critics. Pretty good from the users, all that, Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
A lot of love from Savage. Let's talk about this one, though. Here's what you have. Trainspotting. Mark Renton, played by Ewan McGregor, a young man with few prospects and fewer ambitions, lives in an economically depressed Edinburgh. Like most of his friends, Renton is a heroin addict who loves the drug's blissful nothingness. Ooh. Financing his habit also provides excitement and challenges that his life otherwise lacks. Renton's two best friends are also junkies. A lot of junkies. Movies about drugs.
Drugs.
Have we established this?
Yeah.
Drugs play a major part in this movie.
Renton's two best friends are also junkies. Sick Boy, played by Johnny Lee Miller, a snappy dresser obsessed with James Bond. And Spud, played by Ewan Bremmer, a guileless nerd who suggests Pee-wee Herman's debauched cousin. Okay. Renton and his pals also hang out with Begbie, played by Robert Carlyle, a very angry Robert Carlyle, a borderline psychotic who loathes junkies, and even though he drinks like a fish, after one too many brushes with the law, Renton kicks heroin and moves to London, where he finds a job, a flat, and something close to peace of mind. However, Sick Boy, Begbie, and Spud all arrive at his doorstep on the trail of a big score, leading Renton back into drugs and crime, and therefore the ending goes, well, we'll tell you all about that later. What do you think of that? Trainspotting, 1996.
I think that sounds high.
Yeah. Well, let's get high on a trailer right here. What do you say? We'll come back, and you're right where you need to be, Q Filmcast. We'll come back, talk about Trainspotting. Here you go.
Choose life. Choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a big television.
You're a quiet, sensitive type. A little bit crazy, a little bit bad.
Choose washing machines, cars, compact disc players, and dental insurance.
You lied on your application.
Only to get my foot in the door.
What exactly attracts you to the leisure industry?
I don't want pleasure. Like, my pleasure and other people's leisure.
He's always been lacking in moral fibre. He knows a lot about Sean Connery.
That's hardly a substitute.
Do you see the beast? Have you got it in your shite?
Clear enough, Mitch Moneypenny.
Choose sitting on that couch watching mind-numbing, spirit-crushing game shows, stuffing junk food into your mouth.
The beggar's a psycho, man. He's a mate. So what can you do?
What are you two talking about?
Football! What are you talking about?
Shopping!
What's on the menu this evening, sir?
Q Filmcast, and that is Trainspotting, the film we're talking about tonight. We're going to end it out with our top three drug-induced scenes inspired by this film. And let's talk about some facts and figures and trivia. What do you say?
Yeah.
No different. We do it every week.
We do.
Why would tonight be different?
Unless we were high.
Because we're high.
We must be high. Yeah, that's right. What you been smoking over there? In 2009, Robert Carlyle, who we recently talked about in Ravenous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was y'all loved that film.
He was licking me.
I love the film.
In 2009, Robert Carlyle, who played Begbie, told a BAFTA interviewer that he played Begbie as a closeted gay man whose outbursts of violence were due to his fear of being outed. I can see that. Remember the scene in the car in this film?
Now that you say that. Yeah.
Here's another one. Although it looks thoroughly off-putting, the feces in the worst toilet in Scotland scene was actually made from chocolate and smelled quite pleasant. Did you know that Ewan McGregor was open to injecting himself with heroin? Come on, you
I'm
stupid.
Sure he was.
To better understand Renton's character, he later decided against it. Really?
He's method.
Methadone.
Yeah,
he was dumb. Kelly MacDonald, the great Kelly MacDonald. Yeah. You know I've said this. Yeah. Although supposedly 14 in the film, was 19 when making it, it was released on her 20th birthday. Aw.
Mm. Happy birthday.
Now if we can just find out when she was born, we'll know what year it came out.
I guess so. There you go. Not bad. Did you know that, for the close-up shots of Ewan McGregor injecting himself with heroin, a prosthetic arm was constructed by the makeup department, complete with pulsing veins, smack tracks, and a small pocket of blood.
Really? Good job, prosthetic department.
Right.
I have a couple more, but here's the last one. I'm only going to get into this one and see. I think this one needs to be said. Various options were considered to make the film more intelligible for American audiences, which obviously they didn't use. Right. Subtitles were ruled out as they would spoil the effect in using them in the disco scene. I almost said something else. Instead, the actors re-recorded the first 20 minutes of dialogue, softening their accents to attune to American ears with Scottish dialect.
Wow.
Yeah, it's thick on the accents, Max.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It worked.
It did work. And let's talk about what's going to work for us in rating this thing, because we don't use thumbs up or thumbs down. You know this.
That's hallucinatory.
It's so hallucinatory.
It is.
It's not really there.
It's
an illusion.
It's an illusion.
Right.
As Doug Henning would say.
Yeah. Does he say things? I never pay attention. He had a great mustache, that guy.
Oh, he was crazy.
Yeah.
That guy. I think he was high, too.
Yeah. I think this guy is sober, and he's still crazy. Yeah. We're talking about James Hartsub Savage here. What are we going to use to rate this film with Savage?
Tossed pints.
You mean like tossed in anger?
Or indifference? Or indifference.
Yeah. Oh, there's a railing.
just throw your pint.
Hit a lady in the head. No big deal.
Right.
Or as in, I got some heroin. Oop, throwing this pint thing away. I don't want
yeah, that's
heroin.
Right. Oh, the clues, man.
Tossed pints.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into that. We know it's a 10 from you.
Yeah.
Has it changed? Is it still a 10 for you after you've watched this film?
Well, I was kind of curious because I hadn't seen it in probably a decade. You know, and revisiting. And when you say something's a 10, it's like, now I got to stand up for it. Yeah, it's a 10. This is a pretty flawless film. So
yeah, a lot of people like this film. They like pulling back the layers. They still revisit it and get a lot out of it. You're one of them.
Yep, I am. It's a 10.
He's saying 10, Max.
He did. He stuck with the 10.
Couldn't pull him down from it.
No.
I injected the 10.
He injected the 10.
10cc.
Don't send him to rehab.
That's right.
That's right.
He's liking the way this feeling. Are you going to share his needle, Max, and inject yourself with a 10 on Trainspotting? What do you got? How many tossed pints?
I'm not going to 10. I'll go pretty high. I'll go to 8. I might go up to a 9.
Come on, man.
I'll go 8 tossed pints right now.
Come on, man. You got to.
But I could go up. I could go up.
All right.
He wouldn't scoff at someone giving a 9. That's what he's saying.
No, he could get a little.
I'm not going to a 10.
He could get a little higher. We could give him a little bump.
That's a good score. That's a good score, Max. Have you seen this film before?
Mm-hmm. Long, I like him. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah.
But it's strange. You watch it, even though I hadn't seen it in 10 whatever years, it all seems so familiar to me, I guess.
Really?
Like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Yeah, okay, yeah, I remember this. I remember that part. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like you didn't even forget anything once you start watching it.
Yeah, but to recall it without watching it again, you couldn't remember anything.
You could remember some stuff. Yeah. I mean, the stuff that really sticks out. But when you're watching it again, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I remember all of this stuff.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. good score there. Let's go over to the producer here. What you got, Adam? You've seen this film before. We got some high scores here, 10 and 8 for Max. What are you going to go with? How many tossed pints?
Actually, I'm going to say when this first came out, I hated this movie.
Really?
Yes, I hated it. I don't know why.
I don't either.
And I have yet to watch it since.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I finally watched it again the other day, and I'm going to say I quite enjoyed it. Not as high as y'all did, so I'm going 7.
Okay. It was amusing enough to give it a 7.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know why I didn't like it back then.
Did it seem dated looking at it as a 1996? Did it stink of 1996?
No.
No. Holds up okay.
Smell like chocolate.
He's like, they're making fun of me in like this chocolate. Movie.
Well played, sir.
8, 7, 10. Let me tell you what I got. Danny Boyle, first of all, you know, I'm a pretty big fan of his. He's never really let me down. Like I say, loved 127 Hours.
Yeah.
Enjoyed Millions. Didn't hate The Beach. To me, I think 28.
The Beach, too?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Oh, I love that film.
I did, too, man. And 28 Days Later, to me, is a masterpiece.
I love that movie.
And I somehow enjoyed Slumdog, even though Bollywood makes me want to wrestle with a pistol, okay? I got to say, this is the only film that I really hadn't sat down and watched. I've seen it in chunks, like here and there. But, like, Max, I remembered things, but I couldn't place it. It needed a good sit-down for me, so I was glad to get to it. Listen, man, this is a tripped-out movie to me.
You reckon?
Yeah. And I have some things to say. But Savage, I don't say it's tripped out because everyone in it is tripping out. That's my thing.
Okay. Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
I say because after watching this, it's like, what am I watching? Is it a comedy? Is it a sad cautionary tale? Is it something I laugh at? Do I cry at it? Do I cringe at it? Do I like these people, despise these people? Should I cheer for this guy or should I not? You don't even know.
All of the above. Mm.
You know, but I think that's what makes it a good film because I think the answer to all those questions are yes and no. You know what I'm saying? It slaps you around from start to finish. That's for sure. It's weird. It's engaging. It's playful. It's uncomfortable. It asks a lot of you, but I think I get it. I think, like I mentioned earlier, this is a film about metaphors, and I don't think it's really a movie so much about drug addicts or the perils of addiction. I think this is a film about the joy of surviving, and I think it's a nod to those people who have come to that realization. I think it's a good film, and I think there's a lot here to pull back and look at. I'm going to go a strong 8, maybe 9. I'm not going to go up there to 10. I just think it's a bit overplayed at times, but that's not a slight on the film. I could possibly go 9, but I'm gonna volley along with Max here on this one, see if I can get me to 9, but I really enjoyed watching this film. It's all over the place, but there's a lot there.
Yeah.
It's real chocolatey, real flavorful. All right, so that's what I have on that one, too. I think we all kind of enjoyed it. Adam, Low Man on the Totem Pole was 7.
Wow.
When you can say that, the film's not hated.
That's 33.
Right. Yeah.
All right, to get this thing going, though, let's talk about why we basically like this film. And I want to ask you first, Max. Mm-hmm. Gumbo Johnson, because I want Savage to follow up and maybe see if he can bookend this conversation because he's the one that queued it up. But you basically like this film. What
I liked it a lot.
What is it about this film that makes you like it a lot for the most part?
For the most part?
Yeah.
The visual language of the movie. It really was striking. I was sitting there, and like I said, I hadn't seen it in years. I forgot a lot of stuff. I mean, from the opening shot through the first 20 minutes, I'm sitting there thinking, man, this looks like a Kubrick movie. And then they're in that club, and it's like,
call.
Oh, look at that. I knew I was onto something.
Yeah.
And then you had mentioned previously the thing about Scorsese.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think the visual style was very Scorsese-like, but the story style was very Scorsese. It played like something Scorsese would have written, maybe if he was Scottish or something. You know?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of freeze frames of people's faces and then the narrative over top of that.
And then if you notice in the Malaco Valisette club, when they go into the women's bathroom, there's Iris painted on the wall, leaning up against the door. And then he's back out in the club, and then there's Travis painted on the wall holding the guns.
Well, I totally missed that.
Oh, God. That stuck out like a sore thumb to me.
He was standing right between the guns with the guns over his shoulders. Yeah.
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 So that's really struck a nerve with me because I love that kind of stuff. The way that he played with the camera and put it at different angles, and it almost seems like he cut frames out at some points to maybe speed it up a little bit and make it real jarring looking.
Yeah,
I love that kind of thing. When you get real creative with the way you film something,
right,
that really stands out.
The craft work of filmmaking.
The actual filming of it.
Absolutely,
you know? I loved all that stuff. And the performances were great. I thought everybody was good in it. I didn't like everybody.
Because we know you try to make friends.
Blur that line. But I thought it was well done as far as the story went. And you asked earlier, do you hate this guy? Do you cheer for this guy? Well, yeah, you kind of cheer for him. You kind of root for him. But at the same time, you're like, you know, come on. And then when his parents lock him in the room, you're like, yep, okay, that's at least somebody's sticking by this guy and doing, you know, taking the tough love course, I guess.
Yeah.
yeah, I really like the way the narrative in this thing played out. And you really did want to see this guy get his act cleaned up and succeed.
Yeah.
You know, whether you can say he did that or not, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's a blurry line there.
There's a lot of ambiguity in this thing.
It's real ambiguous. Ambiguous.
Ambiguous, that's good.
Ambiguous.
I like the word ambiguous.
Ambiguous.
That could be a Scottish word. We don't know.
Ambiguous.
But, you know, you bring up the
like
parents.
Someone you meet in the club.
Yeah, it could be. But you even bring up the parents. And once again, there's some ambiguity there. Were they good parents? Were they kind of distant parents? Were they? I didn't even know what to think of them. Everybody in this film was ambiguous.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on the parents. Were they doing the right thing? Were they... I mean, what was the right thing? What's the right thing to? I've never dealt with somebody on heroin. What do you do? You lock them in the room and just feed them tomato soup all day? I don't know.
No, but when he decided to clean himself up, he bought a bucket, some magazines, and some cans of soup. I guess that's what
three
you
need. Buckets.
Three buckets. One for the number two, and the one and the vomit. And then you lock yourself in this room, and you don't go anywhere, and it shows him tearing the boards off
immediately.
Which is probably the way it would go, right?
That's probably what would happen.
No, but what you're saying is you thought it was very effective the way that the craftsmanship of Boyle's. Let's stitch this thing together. It really worked for you. You didn't see this.
Oh, yeah. Loved it.
Yeah, I did too. I really did. Looking into this, he said he wanted to make this an homage to a lot of directors he really respected. This is kind of a calling card to them. Adam, what do you think? You say you liked it better this time than last. So what picked up for you on this second viewing?
I think when I first saw it, I think it was just all the stupid drug references they kept doing. I don't know why.
It's a drug movie.
At the point, I didn't like care for it. I don't know. But anyway, what I liked about it now was knowing people that have gone through this and seeing how they're trying to get away from their friends and get away from that environment, and then seeing that he's doing the same thing, and then here they all come swarming back to him.
Yeah.
They need him in that group. I saw that, and I was like, wow, I can kind of resonate with that of knowing people who's gone through this stuff before.
Okay, so as maybe a more mature person, he's 20 years old, you can grab some of the deeper things out of there. But as far as the way the film was made... did you like that? Like, Max likes the craft here. What about you?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. I thought it looked great. Even I like the fact that it is an older film. I thought the grittiness looked really good. I know Max is going to stare at me on that one. All conversations. But
you're finally coming around.
I kind of liked how it went. I like, you know, you're just not going to escape this reality that you live in until you get far away from people.
And it'll even follow you. You're going to have to cut it and kill it. You can't run from it. Which is what he does, and he kind of kills it at the end. To hell with
it. Kind of.
Yep.
Let's talk to you, Savage. Let's talk about what you like. You went way up there 10. This is your 10.
Yeah.
This is your triumphant film here. So I want to hear about why you love this film so much.
No, it was a knee-jerk 10 because I hadn't seen it in many, many years. And when I saw it on Netflix, I'm like, yep, 10. You know? And I'm glad that in the revisit that it really holds up for me. I remember being longer. It's actually a fairly short film. It's only 96 minutes.
Didn't feel like a long film. It felt like a good burn to me.
Yeah. Yeah, the first time I watched it, I remember it just being a long film. You know, I don't know if because it was heavy, and the subject matter is heavy, but what makes this a flawless film, for one, it's brilliantly written, the adapted screenplay, it's a brilliant screenplay, it's brilliantly acted, it's brilliantly directed, and Max said it pretty perfectly, the visual language of the film
nice way to say
is just stunning. It doesn't seem dated in any way. I mean, I guess the TV... when they're jacking a TV or something, that it seems kind of, or like when you're stealing a battery out of a car.
Or they're going through his VHS collection.
Yeah, well, that, you know, but it just doesn't feel dated. It feels contemporary. It feels like it's a now kind of story. It's timeless. And then to your point, it is all of those things. Is it a comedy? I don't remember being as funny as the first time I watched it. This is a funny film. And I think it's kind of listed as kind of a comedy.
You don't know what to put this film. I don't know. I don't know how to categorize this film.
You really don't.
IMDb says it's a drama.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It is a drama. It is a comedy. It is a coming of age tale. It is a redemption story. It is all of those things. And I think that's the power of this film. You know, I'm a sucker for visual things, and there are scenes in this film that are just beautifully graphic.
Yeah,
just beautifully graphic, and just cut you to the bone with the imagery of it, and that I think that's what people remember, and I think it kind of catches you off guard. You don't expect that in this film. It's just like when these very surreal things happen, they just come out of nowhere, and they're just presented as a matter of course.
Yeah, and you like filmmakers that do this a lot, like Refn, where everything's bold. What you're looking at comes out the screen at you.
Yeah.
This film's full of that. It's not just some guy standing next to a wall. He's standing next to a wall with this mural you can't take your eyes off of.
Right.
Painted on the wall and back of him.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of stuff in that film like that visually that your eye wants to grab onto.
Yeah, and this is chock full of it.
Yep.
And it's the story is good, too. Yeah. It's that timeless man against himself, man against his own nature story.
Yep. And I was going to get into that because that's what I always grab 8-8 to. Someone who's alone and right and trying to win the battle against themselves.
Yeah.
I'm always attracted to that theme. And for me, that's what I liked best about this film was I can pull all this great stuff away. When I talked about it earlier being a story about the joy of survival, that's what I think this film really is about in the end, because he survived and he's joyous. I think that's what that journey was about.
Yeah.
That's what I get out of this film.
Yeah. I mean, there was kind of the irony of it because the way it starts, you know, choose Telly, choose a gym membership, choose all these things, you know, and then
why would I do that?
Right. Yeah. You know, I choose this, and he chose heroin. And at the end, it's bookmarked with, I'm going to choose the Telly. I'm going to choose the, you know, I'm going to be, you know, like Green. You.
And I like that, too, when movies zip up nice, where there's something at the end that harkens back to the beginning and everything in the middle cinches it up and it makes sense. And this film did that. And I think I just love the way it ended because of that.
Yeah.
It ended the same way it opened. I like that. Max, what do you got when you think of scenes, too? When you think of scenes, Max, or something that really comes out from this film, rises to the surface, you think about what? What are some things that you pull from this?
Well, I'm going to disqualify the two scenes everybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, okay, the toilet scene, that was great. Okay, the dead baby crawling on the ceiling, that was cool, too.
Really? The dead baby's cool?
Well, not cool, but it was like, oh, this is
But that really, those are the two scenes everybody references.
Those are the ones everybody talks about. Yeah. And for good reason. I mean, there's not a...
Yeah, that
they
detox
don't talk
scene.
About them for no reason. You know, it's crazy good. Yeah. I really like the bar scene where... What's his name?
Begbie.
Tosses the beer over his shoulder and it goes to a freeze frame. And then they interrupt it and they tell this little backstory for a second. And you think, I guess they just kind of forgot about the, I guess what happens when, because I was thinking, oh man, somebody's going to hit somebody with that beer. And you think they kind of forgot about it for a minute.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it cuts right back to it and boom, starts going again and you hear somebody scream. And it's like he did it just to pick a fight, and he runs down there and starts his huge fight.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he champions himself as, I hate all drug addicts, and you guys are all losers. But they reference that in the film by going, well, he's a drug addict, too. People are his addiction. Conflict is his addiction.
Yeah.
And alcohol, yeah. So it kind of showed him just like them, but in a different way. Yeah.
And they discuss him in the movie. There was one line. I can't remember what prompted the line, but one of the guys says, but he's our mate, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were talking about what a jerk the guy is. But he's our mate. You know, I was like, I wouldn't hang around with that guy. But I guess, you know, in retrospect, you think back in your late teens, early 20s, you're like, I kind of did hang around some guys like that.
I may have been that guy.
Well, I wasn't that guy. I know that. But you knew people like that.
Yeah, but he was kind of the older guy.
He was the older guy.
So it's like, you know, everybody's had that friend where the older guy, it's like, oh, he's the older guy.
Yeah. The other one that really sticks out is early in the movie when Ewan McGregor and Sick Boy are in the park with the pellet gun.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just sitting there talking about, he's talking about James Bond movies, and they're just. Yeah.
That's all he talked about. Shoot.
I thought that was great. The conversation, it wasn't just them talking about James Bond. You kind of got the feeling this guy really pictures himself as sort of a modern day James Bond.
Right.
And that's
why
they're out there with the gun. Ooh, let's be snipers for
very
suave. For a
little,
And I didn't know.
Dressed real well and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I really, really like that scene.
I didn't know what was going to happen in this scene, too. I'm thinking, are they hired for sniper? Are they hired to assassinate somebody for money? Are they hitmen?
Really? You thought that?
Well, for a minute, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I didn't know, they must shoot this dog in the rear end, and the dog's going to attack the owner. I mean, I don't think that. So even though this great conversation's going on, which I loved, at the same time, I'm still wondering what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
A lot was going on, you know?
Yeah, well, I like that conversation because... It was prefaced with, great, now we're both sober, and we got to deal with each other sober.
That's one other thing I just thought of. Going back to when they're in the Kubrick bar, Malaco Valaset, or whatever it's called, and they all of a sudden put in the subtitles because the music's so loud, but you can still hear them.
But it was
and
perfect.
They, and they didn't just put in, like, one sentence. There was, like, huge paragraphs of subtitles.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there talking, and then they show the girls in the bathroom, and they meet back up. What are y'all talking about?
Football.
But they were talking
shopping.
Yeah, shopping, football. But they were talking about how he couldn't perform.
Right. Or commitment issues. Right. Or, you know, all that, or how she's holding out on the other one.
You know, I like the fact that it didn't matter if you could completely follow what everybody was saying. I like the fact that I had to work for that. That it made me sit there and go, what on earth? I think I know what he said. The lack of subtitles adds to this film.
Yeah,
and
particularly
they
with Begbie.
Begbie, man.
You could hardly understand that, dude.
Sometimes I can never understand the guy I'm going to talk to right now, and that's
James,
the producer. I hadn't heard from you in a minute, Adam. What rises to the surface here? What is it that you remember first looking back at this one?
My first thing I think about is the scene where Begbie wakes up and he's covered in feces.
That wasn't Begbie.
That wasn't Begbie.
Spud.
That was Spud. Spud. Sorry, Spud. Yeah. Y'all just said Begbie.
He drank a lot.
Yeah.
Is that what that was? I wanted to make sure that's what that was.
No,
I didn't.
He was drunk.
Yeah.
He was drunk.
Adam, when that happens to you, don't you usually just run straight out the front door? He went and say, I hide everybody in the kitchen.
With the sheets.
Yeah, with the sheets. You just want to run and hide.
No. And that,
That's what I want to do.
That's what I want to do.
You just want to run and hide when you do that.
Go ahead, Adam. Sorry.
To me, though, the scene that stands out most, though, is the one where when the baby dies.
Yeah.
And they're all standing over the baby. And they're just actually talking about whose baby is this, really.
Yeah.
And then you finally realize that who it is, why he's sitting there and over crying.
It's the gravity. It shows you the consequence. All right, it's all fun and games. No, there's consequence. Big ones.
No, there's a brilliant line, too, with that.
Yeah. What is it?
It's Renton, Mark, Ewan McGregor, says, I wish I could say something human.
Yeah.
He thinks that. And then what he says is, I'm cooking up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're just saying, say something, do something. And all they can do is sit around and shoot it up to kill it, to kill the pain. And then it cuts into that great sequence, which is how it opened. Then it goes back into that sequence of how it, when they're running down the street and doing all that with these great stop action scenes. And it goes right back into the beginning. So now you know basically who they are completely from beginning to that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Hooligans.
Yeah. Just hooligans, man.
Just, yeah. Drug-addled hooligans.
They were talking about football.
Hey.
Yeah, they had it on videotape.
What?
You know what we need to do? We need to stop right here. Let's take a break for a second. Let's listen to a piece of the film we're talking about right now, which is Trainspotting. 1996. You'll hear a piece of it, and we'll come back in just a minute, wrap it up, and eventually get to our top three drug-induced scenes in movies. So here you go, Trainspotting, 1996.
Relinquishing junk, stage one, preparation. For this you will need one room which you will not leave, soothing music, tomato soup, 10 tins of, mushroom soup, 8 tins of, for consumption cold, ice cream, vanilla, one large tub of, magnesia, milk of, one bottle, paracetamol, mouthwash, vitamins, mineral water, Lucozade, pornography. One mattress, one bucket for urine, one for feces, and one for vomitus. One television, and one bottle of Valium, which I've already procured from my mother, who is, in her own domestic and socially acceptable way, also a drug addict. And now I'm ready. All I need is one final hit to soothe the pain while Valium takes effect.
There, that is Trainspotting, 1996, a piece of it. Savage.
Yeah.
We had left off talking about scenes.
Yeah.
I want to kickstart this thing again. I want you to inject me.
All right.
With what you say is a great scene in this film. What is it you remember first when you think back? Well, or second or third?
First, well, I'll just tell you a scene that I like in the film. Spud's interview.
I loved it. Travel agent, isn't that what it was?
Yeah. You talk about needing subtitles.
Yeah.
You could hardly understand what he said. I mean, he was so jacked up and so Scottish.
Over Scottish, yeah.
So Scottish.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant. And then just the physical comedy of that, the language, and the shooting of it where it's almost fisheye lens.
Yep,
I mean,
yep.
Again, it goes back to what Max said. The visual language of this film reveals itself in the nuance, even in the comedic nuance and then the dramatic nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the more overtly comedic parts of the film.
Spot on, man. That is a bit of a comic relief. I wouldn't say comic relief, but physical comedy almost.
The way
he's twisting and turning in the chair.
Yeah.
And of course, when they say, is there anything about you that is a negative? No. Other than I'm a perfectionist, man.
I'm a perfectionist.
Because everybody says that. I've been asked that.
And you've said it.
Everybody says it. Oh, other than, I'm just too much of a perfectionist. So you know that's coming. Right. Pretty good writing there. Something we can all relate to.
Yeah.
The best part's when you put on those glasses towards the end.
Yeah, yeah. Those glasses. What else you got scene-wise, Max? What else comes out?
I like when he first met the girl.
Yeah.
When he chased her out of the, chased after her out of the club.
Diane.
And
Diane.
She shot him down.
Yeah, but then she just left the car door open. The guy was like, "You coming?" Yeah, okay.
She was like his conscience. She was always there saying things he needed to hear.
Yeah.
Very positive. Like an angel on his shoulder.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so positive. I'm 14.
His 14-year-old conscience.
Okay, never mind.
I mean, you know, that's strange, though, but I really did like the dynamic between those two. I thought it really, really worked. I thought they played off each other really well.
And she was found an open casting call, by the way. We're talking about Kelly MacDonald.
Yeah.
He just saw her on the street and said, "Hey, you want to be in a movie? I heard you like acting."
Yeah.
I did like that scene. We talk about the dynamic. She is the one that said, "You know what? It's time for you to leave this behind. You're better than this. You need to move to London, and you need to do this." She was kind of like his force of good.
His Jiminy Cricket.
A bit of a Jiminy Cricket.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to listen to somebody eventually.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, 14-year-old girl that blackmailed you.
I don't
might as well listen to her.
Girl. let's talk a bit more about Begbie, though. You talk. Because I just want to talk about this guy.
Nah, man.
You mentioned the scene where he threw the pint over the rail, which is where we get our concurrency. There were a couple other scenes here that when I think about what comes out, wait, there's a million things to talk about, but I want to talk about this some more. There are two scenes where I think Robert Carlyle just ate the screen and ate the role.
Yeah.
I mean, that ending scene when he goes crazy and beats that guy for spilling his beer.
After the score, yeah.
And he also beat someone up for opening up a bag of chips when he was playing pool, remember?
Yeah.
But the Carlyle scenes really popped for me, man. This guy played an absolute monster in this movie, and he did it so well.
Yeah, arguably he's the antagonist. If it's not the drugs, I mean, if there's a physical antagonist in this film, it's Begbie.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that they're running from. He's the one that they're scared of. But he's the mate, too.
How hard must it be for this guy to find people to hang out with him? He's got like these three guys who are like, guys.
Three heroin junkies.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe that's the best he could do, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. He was something else.
Yeah, but no, there was definitely a menace. I mean, there was an intensity and a menace to the Begbie character, for sure.
I really liked that performance. I really bought into it, and I felt it. I felt that menace, Savage.
Yeah.
Especially when, at the end, he looked like he was going to kill. He really wasn't there to be just mates with these. He would have killed him if he had to.
Sure.
He showed that to McGregor. He showed it to Spud when he ripped his hand open with a knife.
Yeah.
He didn't care.
Yeah. No.
But I thought he was a metaphor for many things. Metaphor for the things in life that you just need to get away from.
The addiction.
At all costs, get away from.
The addiction.
Yeah.
He was, like I said, he's our mate.
Yeah.
Well, the heroin is the drug that's, well, that's just my friend that I do. So in that way, the Begbie was the physical embodiment of the addiction, the something that you were bound to only by choice.
Yeah. Did you like the ending, guys? Max, I'll ask you first.
I did, yeah.
I thought it was strong here. I thought that it didn't just end with them wallowing in their filth and that's it. It took you to a new place. It took you all the way to London,
right.
And you began to really root for this guy, and then it's almost like this posse's right on his heels.
Right.
It kind of played out like that, like you not so fast. Mm-hmm. You know, and I kind of felt myself getting wrapped up into, okay, where, how's this? He's almost out. He's almost there.
Yeah.
He found the job at the real estate place. He's doing well, and here they come. And what a bunch of a-hole roommates, man.
Yeah.
Stealing his food, putting cigarettes out in his furniture. Yeah.
Just leaving trash piled up outside.
Drop them guys.
Going
like
through
a,
his
like a
bank
habit.
Account.
Yeah.
Putting his feet in his face while he slept.
But we haven't even talked about the corruption of the pure, and that's Tommy.
Let's go with that, yeah. Yeah. He said that they introduced him as someone who would never do drugs.
Yeah,
he
was the pure guy.
He always told the truth, you know.
Yeah. It's sad. I mean again, it's the tragedy. It's I think you're spot on. I mean, this thing is all about metaphors. It's you know, taking what is good, the last good thing and ultimately that got corrupted. And ultimately that is what ended up dying. Toxoplasmosis. I mean, who saw that coming?
Whereas there's your irony and there's your comedy a bit, too.
Yeah.
But you can't quite laugh at it.
Yeah. But no, the guilt because they stole or Renton stole the tape.
Well, you think about that in retrospect, that's got to be kind of disheartening for Ewan McGregor's character. You know, he tried like three times in the whole movie to kick the heroin habit. And then there's this guy that's done everything to stay healthy and take care of himself. And he goes, and there he goes. And he's like, oof. What's the point of me even trying to
well,
kick
I mean, it
this,
was also
you know?
The AIDS epidemic, too. I mean,
I know that. But, you know, and he went, you know, he did go get tested, and then everybody's asking him, oh, did you get the test?
No.
Yeah, I'm clean.
Yeah.
Good for you.
in a way that's got to bring him down on a personal level, because he's like, well, you know, here I'm poisoning my body with all this crap, and I'm trying to get off of it, and here this guy, you know, this guy's like a bodybuilder and everything, and boom, there he goes.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple things here that stood out to me that I'm glad they put in the film, and that's where, okay, you know, the hopelessness comes from their drug addiction and, you know, maybe just, you know, their circumstances at home or whatever.
Right.
But there's a scene here where they go out to get some fresh air, and he goes off on this Scotland sucks rant.
Yeah.
I was just about to bring that up.
We're the lowest of the low. People make fun of the English, but they're just wankers. But we're colonized by wankers. Right. I thought, I really remember that scene, because that's where I felt like, man, even at the heart of everything, you have no self-esteem. There's no, you don't feel good about anything. It's not just that, you know, if you quit doing drugs, you're going to feel good. You just feel like there's nothing for you, even in your DNA. You got to get the hell out. I mean, right. I felt more hopeless for him at that scene for some reason. It really resonated with complete hopelessness, just as much, if not more so, in many ways, as when it showed him sticking a needle in his arm.
It was, they were self-hating, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, golly, it's bad enough we're drug addicts and all this stuff, can't get a job. And on top of that, we're Scottish?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, really?
Which I can dig.
Maybe it's the other way around.
I dig the Scots, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I got none.
Yeah, I like that scene. That had a lot of weight to it, Max. I'm glad you kind of followed me up on that. I like that. I like that. A lot of hopelessness.
Yeah, and it stopped. They drove all the train all the way out there, and then they got like 100 yards and went back.
Yep, that's right. One-ish question. Back to this scene of Spud.
Yeah.
He would come in the physical comedy, once again, played out, and I'm glad they had him in there for that.
Yeah.
He really was like a physical comedian in this thing. But
one thing I want to bring up, though.
It's a raw film. Yeah, go ahead, Adam.
How awesome the soundtrack was.
A great soundtrack.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, Pulp. I thought the use of music was great here. You had Pulp. You had her singing Joy Division. I say her as in Diane. When he's tripping out. Uh-huh. And she's just sitting there kind of staring at him, humming New Order, rather.
New Order.
When he's detoxing.
Yeah, but come on. If I could pick one musician to hang out with, it might be Jarvis Cocker of Pulp. He mooned Michael Jackson, for crying out loud. But yeah, it's a great soundtrack.
Bernard
Pulp
Summers,
and all that.
Hands down.
Yeah, absolutely.
All over Bernard Summers.
I'm glad you mentioned that, too. It's a nice time capsule for that film time, too, because I loved a lot of the music that was out at that time.
I thought that was supposed to be our top three.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. All right, so we're going to have to wrap this up, get into our top threes here in a few minutes. But any last scenes, last words? Adam, let's go to you first. What is it you want to pull out, if anything at all? And I'm talking about scenes from the movie, by the way, when I say pull out.
That was a horrible-looking baby on the ceiling.
It was pretty rough.
Okay, that wasn't CGI. It must have been animatronics.
Yeah.
What do you mean by horrible-looking?
It just looked bad, just the way it's like he was.
I think it was supposed to. Yeah. It had a nightmarish quality to it.
And the face was, I mean, I liked the face, but I thought when he was walking across the ceiling, how its arms were just in the same rhythmic motion.
That's the scene a lot of people talk about.
That in the toilet scene.
That in the toilet. Let's talk about the tripped-out scene. That is a big stanza in this film. It's one most people will remember. They lock him in this room, and all kinds of weird stuff happens. The baby.
The detox.
Begbie's under the covers with him in his mind.
Yeah.
Which is just horrifying if you knew who this guy was. And he's smoking under the sheets with him.
They're all there.
You've got Spud hanging out on top of the door.
In chains, yeah.
In chains.
Yeah, he's got the chains because he's already in jail.
And it's filmed with that fisheye camera.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy, AIDS-ridden Tommy's under the blankets with him. I mean, it's all of it. The girls there, Begbie, everybody. He's freaking out on everybody in that detox scene. Just freaking out.
But what about the baby, Savage? And Max, maybe you can answer this as well. Did that effect hold up for you? It seemed really dated. That dated that film.
Well, I think it was intentional.
There's no way they looked at that and go, yeah, that looks great.
Yeah.
I think it was supposed to have that nightmarish, surrealist-looking quality to it.
Yeah.
Because, the guy's coming down off of heroin. He's hallucinating this
stuff.
So it's going to be...
Yeah. Now, the first dead baby, how did that look?
Oh, zombified. Awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made me look away.
Yeah. No, that's the impact.
Yeah.
Looked bloated.
Yeah, that's the impact scene. The other one is supposed to be... I think that was a choice to make it look surreal.
Otherworldly.
Yeah. It wasn't supposed to be...
The head was a little too unproportioned and just looked otherworldly.
Yeah.
And I like the way it was filmed, too, with the camera almost strapped onto the baby as it crawled across. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Filmed interesting like that. Mm-hmm. Like you say, the visual aspect of it.
I love that part.
Yeah.
And that weird, like, long hallway trick that they can do with cameras where it just seems like the room just stretches
growing
out.
Growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, with that weird train wallpaper.
Yeah.
That was his boyhood home.
The one thing I want to end with, my last thing I want to talk about is, again, the ending. I thought it was interesting how he leaves the money for Spud,
yeah,
and he cut the suckers, the ones that weren't right for him, and he grabbed his own life again,
yeah,
and he gave hope to the one that he thought deserved it, that really was the one that could do something good with this money. And yeah, even said, out of all my friends, this is the one that basically has a chance at redemption, and he left it for him.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that I thought it ended up very much like a positive film at the end to me. I like that it was survival. He's in control of his life. He's empowered. He's walking away saying he's going to embrace the things that at the beginning he said he wanted nothing to do with.
Yeah.
And he's on top of the world, man. Everybody else is back in that trashed hotel room, the round one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Begbie's losing his mind.
Yeah, what do you think, yeah, of that, Max?
Oh, God.
He's left to his own devices there.
Yeah. 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 With the cops coming, you know, and he was already wanted. So.
They probably shot him.
They probably did. I'll tell you what, listen, if there's nothing else to add, why don't we just end it right there, unless you got one more thing?
Anything well, else? I mean, I think we got to give a shout-out to The Overdose and that great Velvet Underground soundtrack.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the carpet overdose, and he's like, I'm going to call a taxi, oh, and yeah, you like, see the oh, ambulance
yeah,
coming,
yeah,
and then he puts him in a taxi.
Yeah, that was good. And then the whole thing's framed with little pieces of carpet yeah, on the again, side of the camera.
Yep.
Again, it's the brilliant, the visual language of the film.
Yeah,
you go back to it, it really is stunning. You guys should go up to nines.
I think I'm going to go to nine with you.
I think I'll go to a nine.
Let's go. All right. Let's do it. It deserves,
come on, we'll do an eight, Adam. Come on.
It deserves its lore. And also, Mother Superior, the guy that sold the drugs, always shown in a red light like he's
you
the
know
devil.
Why they call him Mother Superior?
Because he jumped the gun?
By the length of his habit.
Nice. See that? Ending it right there. I'm going nine. Max going nine. Tossed Pints. Savage, you're sticking 10. Adam, seven. Low man on the pole.
Sorry.
Seven. But he's not bad.
Yeah. Okay. He's a sick boy over there.
What's the total on that, Max?
35.
35 Tossed Pints. One last time. Here you go. Trainspotting. Come back. We're going to talk about our top three induced, drug-induced scenes in films. Here you go.
So why did I do it? I could offer a million answers, all false. The truth is that I'm a bad person, but that's going to change. I'm going to change. This is the last of that sort of thing. I'm cleaning up and I'm moving on, going straight and choosing life. I'm looking forward to it already. I'm going to be just like you. The job, the family, the washing machine, the car, the compact disc and electrical tin opener, good health, low cholesterol, dental insurance, mortgage, starter home, leisure wear, luggage, three-piece suite, DIY, game shows, junk food, children, walks in the park, 9 to 5, good at golf, washing the car, choice of sweaters, family Christmas, index pension, tax exemption, clearing the gutters, getting by, looking ahead, the day you die.
We're back once again. Q Filmcast. There you go. One last time. Trainspotting 1996, the film we talked about tonight. Just got back from the bathroom, Adam. You need to clean that thing. Hey. I tell you, I don't know what you're doing around. If this was Scotland, that would be the worst bathroom in all of Scotland. Get in there with a mop and a squeegee.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. No, just joking. inspires our top three, this film does, our top three drug-induced scenes in films.
Right.
Let's go. Let's do it right here, Savage. Sure. Number three for you. What's it going to be?
Altered States, the Mexican cave trip scene.
I don't think I've seen this film.
I have not seen that in a long time.
William Hurt's debut?
It's been a long time. I have seen this. It's been a long time, enough to where I can tell you I basically hadn't seen it.
Basically based off a true story, but it's a great thing where he goes to this cave and the indigenous people give him like a mushroom powder injection, whatever. And there's this great scene where at the end of the trip, he kind of lays down, and this woman who was a Gila monster, but she turns into a woman, and then this dust storm comes, and they're covered in dust, and then they turn into dust, and then they're washed away as dust. It's a really, really neat, great practical effect.
Sounds like a Ken Russell movie.
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah. No, it's a really, really well done. Kind of based on a true story, too.
As you say that, some of that comes back to me. I was like 8 when I seen it.
Yeah.
Adam, you seen this film?
Yeah, I like the sensory depth, whatever.
You'll get your top three.
When he's the goat, the cross. I love that part.
Well, let's get right to you. Okay. Adam, what you got for number three? We're talking about drug-induced scenes in film.
The absinthe scene in Eurotrip.
Nope. I've never seen Eurotrip.
Where they're in the club and they start drinking absinthe, and then the brother and the sister start making out with each other. It's kind of funny.
Oh, in Eurotrip. Yeah, okay.
It's funny.
I'll say that because someone on the Twitter feed brought that up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they brought that up. Well, you'd have to be hallucinating, I think. Not bad. And you do like absinthe. I think you've talked about this before. Yeah,
usually keep it around.
Yeah, you're probably on it right now. Max Gumbo Johnson. You know, so I think gumbo could be a drug.
This is a tough one to narrow down. There's some things you want to keep off, but this one, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put it on there. The mirror scene in Apocalypse Now, where Martin Sheen just drunk off his ass.
That's like supposed to be like a real thing, right?
Yeah, he was actually drunk, and he had a heart attack right after he did that scene.
Oh, yes. That movie almost killed him.
And he punched the mirror.
And he punched the mirror. Yeah. That was great.
That was good. Good answer.
And it was an impactful scene in the movie.
Absolutely.
It made a big difference.
Let me tell you what my number three is. We're talking about drug-induced scenes inspired by Trainspotting. My number three is when Arthur visits Linda and Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're a hedge. You're a good man, Perry. Remember that? And he goes into the apartment and he crushes her little
napkin holder.
Little napkin holder.
It's a goner.
Yeah.
He's taking the knife out of the cheese. You think he wants some cheese?
That's not that scene.
I know, but that's my favorite line of the movie.
This guy was drunk, beautifully drunk. You've seen Arthur.
Yeah.
What a performance by Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
Come on.
The quintessential performance by Dudley Moore. I mean, that's what everybody thinks Dudley Moore is now.
He was so torn up in that scene, though, when he goes in there trying to put that thing back together. That's my number three. Anyways, I'm going to give a shout-out second week in a row to Arthur. Maybe we'll talk about that one day. Savage, number two, go.
Yeah, Fear and Loathing, the hotel scene.
Ooh.
Terry Gilliam.
The whole movie.
He's my guy. right? The hotel scene where they pull up to the hotel.
Oh, man.
In the bar, and people are turning to lizards, and... You know, he's just tripping out.
It's heavy on the trip out.
Yeah. Oh, the whole movie is heavy. And again, based on a real person.
Yeah, just like the book, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exact same thing happened in the book.
Sure did. Adam, go ahead. Number two for you. What's it going to be?
Slow-mo from the movie Dread.
Oh, yes.
Where they inject him.
That's right.
They throw him over the balcony, and he's just falling in slow motion, but about to die, but enjoying the ride.
Not a bad way to go.
That would be an awesome drug. I'm just going to throw that out there. That would just
death, the ultimate high. Max, Gumbo Johnson, number two, drug-induced scene. What?
I wanted to keep him off the list, but I can't help it. It's one of the first ones I thought of was when Cheech eats all the acid up in smoke.
That's right.
I'm freaking out, man.
That's it.
And they're sitting there in the car. And it's not moving. Hey, your mama.
Wasn't there a scene in Cheech and Chong where they smoked dog crap?
It was an up in smoke.
It was up in smoke. That's right.
Yeah.
It was Labrador, man.
Was it St. Bernard or Labrador?
It was Labrador. I know that scene word for word. I listened to that tape over and over and over.
That's too funny, man.
But the acid trip in the car is just, my God, it's funny.
You just ate more acid than I've ever seen anybody.
Hey, what do you mean, man? You see those guys walking around, their head look like a watermelon? Hey, mellow out, man!
May deserve a revisit. What are we up to? Number twos? Wait.
You're number two.
Oh, my number two?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys seen this film, but this is one hell of a scene. Denzel Washington in Flight when they're trying to sober him up.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, man.
Still haven't seen it.
Oh, God. John Goodman doing everything he can to get this guy sober. Clinical. We're about to end up talking about this film. Yeah, John Goodman doing everything he can to sober up a totally wasted Denzel Washington. My number two right there. Great scene. But up to number ones now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Savage. Knock it out. What?
Requiem for a Dream. Ellen Burstyn, the kitchen freak out.
Which one?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say.
Ellen Burstyn, the kitchen freak out when the refrigerator starts freaking out on her, and the TVs, the game show, and she was brilliant in that film.
I think she was nominated for the award, Academy. She didn't get the Academy.
Yeah, she was nominated.
Adam, number one, drug-induced scene inspired by Trainspotting.
First of all, shout out to Matt for Batman Begins, the Scarecrow making everyone hallucinate.
Yeah,
right. Think about that.
But my number one, I just watched it the other night, Lucy.
Not bad.
I have not seen Lucy.
She has to, transport this drug and it goes into her system.
Oh, okay.
And she becomes super intelligent, but the whole movie's just kind of
Scarlett Johansson. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Heard it was okay. Did you think it was okay?
It was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Ironically,
it's not gonna be the best movie in the world, but I really enjoyed it.
Well, it's ironic because you watched it in synchronicity with this show being recorded.
Wow,
drug-induced scenes. Nicely done, Max. Number one for you.
This was a tough one, but not really. Going back to the well, the bad trip from Walk Hard. I love that scene. Yeah. I love everything about that movie. And the bad trip was hilarious.
That's fantastic. They you don't want none of this, do we?
No, they went into cartoony land.
Oh, that's right.
Ah, it's a bad trip.
That's right, yeah.
That's a it's a machete cut off my hand.
Yeah, I think anytime you can reference that film, you will. Max loves it.
That's one of my favorite movies of all time. That's a total 10.
I could almost get there at 10 with Max. I loved it.
I wish more people would see that movie.
Yeah, maybe it'll come up. Maybe it'll come up on Netflix, and we'll talk about it and inspire such. You know what my number one is? Let's just get this out of the way, because I think this is a pretty good answer for number one. But why not Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
Why not laying on the floor and having John Travolta stab you with Eric Stoltz looking on?
Right. I got to stab her three times? No, you just got to stab her once.
A red marker. A magic marker.
Right through the heart. Right through the heart.
Yeah.
Well, you do it. No, you do it. Yeah. When I bring...
No, there were a couple in Pulp Fiction. I would have had to ask you which one, because that one where he first goes out and gets his heroin and shoots up and he's driving around in the car.
Yeah. He's got the weird background.
Yeah. He's just,
yeah, but when you say, what's that scene in Pulp Fiction?
The drug scene in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, you think of Uma Thurman getting impaled in the chest. That's one hell of a scene.
Yeah.
Remember the first time you seen that, it was like, wow, that's one hell of a drug scene.
Yeah.
So because of it,
on the drive-in.
Because of its impact, that's mine, number one.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah.
Oh, man, that was good. So we talked about Trainspotting. Yeah. We talked about all kinds of the stuff that goes on in that film. We rated it with tossed pints, and then we got into our top three drug-induced scenes.
Right.
Talked about getting high.
We did. It was a successful
score.
I put this out on Twitter. You want to hear what came back?
Yeah.
Sure, I posed the question to our many Twitter followers. Listen to this. We have a shout-out by Jake LaCaz at Cos Delicia, of course, The Wolf in Wall Street, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Wolf of Wall Street
the
scene.
The Quaalude scene, come on.
Fantastic, man. Fantastic. There's all kinds of stuff here. Bobby H. at Kid Minneapolis says, Ethan Hawke on Angel Dust and Training Day.
Yep.
He said, what about Jason Statham and Crank?
The whole movie's about that.
David Schultz, our boy at Schultz.
Hey, Schultz.
At Private Falcon says, Peter Weller in Naked Lunch. Imperator Hell says, of course, Requiem for a Dream and Drugstore Cowboy.
Yeah,
we got all kinds of stuff, guys. But I want to give you a little bit of a feedback on the Twitter show.
Shout out to Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah,
it's Eat Me, Drink Me, and Natural Born Killers. The desert scene, he's just tripping out.
And Young Guns, the desert scene. The
I know you do.
Wait a minute, Adam just came up with a scene that if I would have thought about would have been on my list. Did you see the size of those cockadoodle doos?
That almost made my list, right?
Fantastic. Yeah. What's his name? Diamond Phillips gives him a peyote.
Yeah,
and he's shooting at giant chickens.
Yeah.
Out in the desert.
Dog, did you see the size of that chicken, dog? Yeah. Oh, now I just thought of another one.
What is it, Max?
Papillon, when he's taking the coca leaves and he's chasing Chico through the jungle.
It just goes on and on. Now that we're sitting here kicking
Sid
it around.
Nancy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, there's a ton. There's a ton.
Well, we don't have time for ton. We just have time for what we gave you right there. And let's move on to the next one, guys. This was good.
Yeah.
I would tell you this was good. This was a great episode. If you want to check this film out, grab it while it's on Netflix.
Rounds out our tens.
Put the kiddies to sleep. Check out Trainspotting. There you go. Yeah, not bad at all. Let's get into the next one, guys. Let's get into the next episode.
Yep.
Getting a little bit outside the queue next week. Let me tell you what's going on next week.
All right.
I'm going to call this guy the Wizard of Wexford. I'm talking about my boy, Kevin Dillon.
The Kevin Dillon?
The Kevin Dillon. The Wizard of Wexford. That's his new name. I just gave him it. He's from Wexford, Ireland, you know.
Okay.
See, Max, that's the tie-in there. See that?
Send me a postcard.
He sent us a postcard. We said, you know what? We'd hand the cue over to our good buddy in Ireland. Luck of the Irish. The charm of the Irish. Bring us a film.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what to watch?
Yeah.
Old Wizard. Old Kevin Dillon. He says, no problem. One of my favorite films is on Netflix. I want you guys to talk about it. And we're talking about Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz.
The Shaun of the Dead guys.
I'm a little too excited about this.
All right, cool.
Guys. Yeah, basically the Shaun of the Dead guys. So we want to hand it over to a good fan of the show there, Kevin Dillon. He's gonna cue up that film. That's next week. We're gonna talk about that. I think the top three could possibly be top three cop buddies in film. We'll see. I don't know. But that's next week, guys. Tune in for that one. Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. There you go. And we'll be back for that one. This one here ends with Trainspotting top three drug induced scenes and go to theqfilmcast.net to keep up with us, or you can leave your review of this film. You can tell us what you thought of it. You can tell us what you thought of us thinking of it, however you want to frame that.
Right.
But go to theqfilmcast.net if you want to keep up, if you want to find out more. There we go. We'll see you next week, Hot Fuzz. And until then, however it is you say, something unintelligible. Or however it is you say it.